This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast, everybody. I am really looking forward to hearing what our two experts have to say today on indoor cardio training. There are so many options out there, and sometimes us triathletes want to change it up or maybe have some fun. Or is it possible to use these tools to improve our performance? Let's find out. Joining us for this conversation is certified TriDot coach Matt Summer. Matt has a Master's of Science in Exercise Physiology. He is the Fitness Director at the Alamance Country Club in Burlington, North Carolina, and he has over 12 different certifications, including USA Triathlon Level 1 Coach and Ironman U Certified Coach. Matt joined TriDot as an athlete and certified coach in 2018 and guides his athletes with his philosophy of passion, purpose, progress. Thanks for joining us, Matt. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Vanessa. It's always a privilege to be asked back on the podcast. You know what? This is such a fun topic we're going to talk about today, and I'm really looking forward to sharing some thoughts and knowledge with the TriDot Nation.
We are super happy to have you here. And we also have with us today TriDot Master Coach Jeff Rains. Jeff is a certified TriDot coach, a USA Triathlon Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who has a Master of Science in Exercise Physiology and was a D1 collegiate runner. He has over 60 Ironman event finishes to his credit, including the World Championships in Nice, and has coached hundreds of athletes to the Ironman finish line. Jeff has been training and coaching with TriDot since 2015.
Thanks, Vanessa. Excited to be here. And like always, I'm ready to talk shop.
Excellent. I am Vanessa, the average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set topic, and then wind things down with our cool-down.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
There are a ton of music lovers on the I Am TriDot Facebook page, so I am dedicating this warm-up question to them. What word would you add to a song title to make it about triathlon? Jeff, let's start with you.
Man, this was a tough one, and like all of yours and Andrew's warm-up questions, I spend so much time and head-scratching on these warm-up questions than most of them on the main set. I actually have one here. It's a Maroon 5 song, and it's that Sugar song. You know, Sugar, yes, please. And I guess you could add that anything. Sugar on the bike course, sugar on the run course, sugar, yes, please, in the middle of my Ironman. I don't know. That's all I got.
That's great. I love it. How about sugar right before the podcast, too? That'll do it. What about you, Matt? What'd you come up with?
You know, honestly, similar to Jeff, this question made me just laugh out loud when I first read it. I mean, there's so many great pump-up songs out there and so many genres to choose from. But I really thought about this one. I looked at my playlist and one song jumped out at me, hands down. Eminem. We all know him. We all love him. Great tunes. A lot of FTP play songs. But we know the song, Till I Collapse at the Finish Line. That was the one for me. All the way till the end.
Hey, are you going to sing it? Like I think that was the first time I've ever sang on the podcast.
Now, I'm going to do everybody a favor and not try to sing. I'm going to stick to coaching, and we'll leave the singing to Vanessa and the dancing.
Oh, my gosh. You don't know, but maybe you do know. I used to be in musical theater, so I belt out the tunes in the car with my kids. And for this question, I had multiple options, and I had to go with this one because my daughter's currently on a Little Mermaid kick, and so we listened to this song on repeat. It is Poor Unfortunate Souls, and so I have changed the song title to Poor Unfortunate Souls Behind Me.
I love it.
And this goes for, now I'm not capable of doing these things on the bike at this present moment in time, but I'm sure that lots of people will be able to sing this song on the bike and maybe even the run. I don't know, but it can get messy out there. So we'll just leave it right there for that one. The answers to the warm-up question on the I Am Trout Facebook page are always so amazing, and I can't wait to hear them. So look for the post and tell us what you come up with in the comments.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everyone. TriDot is currently running the 2024 edition of our annual research project that we call the Preseason Project. We are looking for non-TriDot athletes who want to jump into the research project this year. Qualifying athletes get 2 free months of TriDot training. It is literally 2 months of the best training available in exchange for TriDot getting to analyze the training data that comes in from those sessions. I started training with TriDot during the 2020 preseason project and fell in love with the structured training schedule. And I started seeing massive improvements in my swim, bike, and run. Even once the 2 month research project was over, I committed fully to TriDot training and have used it for everything from local sprints to my very first Ironman. I'm fitter and faster than I've ever been before, and more importantly, I'm enjoying my races, the sport, and the community plays a big part in my life. If you are already training with TriDot, now is the best time to invite your Tri friends to participate in the preseason project. And if you are a podcast listener and have never given our training a try, use the link in the description for today's show to see if you qualify. Who here loves cardio? I started cardio workouts as an awkward tween in my basement with the likes of Cindy Crawford and Billy Blanks, getting my sweat on and thinking that I was 100% hardcore. But compared to tri training, it was practically child's play. But you gotta start somewhere. So fast forward to today, and there are so many indoor cardio options from machines to epic classes that can enhance or even give us a break from regular training. So let's dive in with question number one. At the gym, what cardio machines do you use personally? Matt, let's go with you first.
Oh, that one's pretty easy for me. I'm fortunate enough, you know, I do work at a fitness center. I'm a fitness director at a private country club, so I've got equipment at my beck and call. And fortunately, my schedule allows me to get on it if I have a cancellation. So I'm kind of lucky in that fact. But the two pieces that I personally utilize the most would most definitely hands down be obviously the treadmill and the elliptical trainer. You know, the treadmill is an easy piece for me to get on. I can really dial in my paces. It's a controlled setting. I can focus on form. I don't have to worry about the weather. I don't have to worry about animals, cars, cyclists, other runners. So it's just super easy. And occasionally, depending on circumstances, you know, if the body's whispering, you know me and my quotes, when the body whispers, you better listen so it doesn't yell. That elliptical is a crucial tool, and I'm sure we'll dive into that a little later on some other questions about how to utilize and blend that into our training. So
that's great. Something that I like to do on the treadmill is I like to put my metronome on and just practice my cadence. And it's definitely something that's not very fun to do, but it makes a huge difference. So I hear about the treadmill in the gym. What do you think, Jeff?
I'm going to come in at a little bit of a different approach. Sometimes when I'm in race prep stamina phase and we have the zone 2 hour bike, sometimes I will go to the gym and just do what I call kind of fun cardio days, keep it all in zone 2, still keep the integrity of my plan, but instead of hopping on the bike. Or actually right now, I'm training for a marathon and I put my bike volume at low, so I don't have that third bike session per week. So anyways, what I've been doing for that kind of quote zone 2 hour spin is I will go to the gym and I'll do like 15 minutes of recumbent bike, 15 minute Stairmaster, 15 minute elliptical, 15 minute rowing, and then I'll manually complete that session, still keeping my heart rate in check and keeping it, you know, as steady as I can in zone 2. So things like that every now and then I like to do to spice things up, change it up. But yeah, treadmill and elliptical, I've got those in my garage. I have a gym membership. I use those just like Matt. Those are probably the easiest two or the most, you know, the ones that I use the most when I'm at the gym. But I kind of like to do that that fun cross training day here and there.
That sounds like so much fun, actually. Yeah, like you said, it's fun. Like the recumbent bike, the Stairmaster to get the legs pumping, and the rowing. That's really awesome to get that all those back muscles firing. I'm definitely gonna work that into my regime come some point during that stamina phase. Question number two. When a triathlete heads to the gym, what are all the main cardio machines that are available to a triathlete? Jeff, let's hit you up first.
Oh, man, there's tons of options. And really, you know, there's ways to approach it. Like if you're just needing motivation, if swimming, biking, and running, and strength training, you know, if you're actually getting bored of that and all of those things, you can kind of take what is going to motivate you the most. What do you like the most, right? But I mean, there's just tons and tons of options. I mean, there's some gyms have arm ergometers, right? And so you could do cardio that way, essentially. I mean, there's just so many different options. But those four that I mentioned above are the ones that I kind of hop around to the most. I sometimes like to do my warm up before my strength sessions on that recumbent bike, just get some blood going. I can answer some emails, just kind of get going in the gym there. But there are tons and tons. I personally like the elliptical. A lot of people don't. I have these little kind of quote games that I play when I'm on the elliptical, like calorie versus pace versus incline. And it kind of keeps my mind busy, while I'm on there. Things like that. Whatever you choose, you know, make it fun, but also be intentional with staying on your plan as best you can.
Okay, now I have to ask a question about the elliptical, because I find I cannot get my heart rate up high enough on the elliptical. So what do you have any little tips for elliptical sessions?
Yeah, the elliptical, first of all, I don't like to hang on to the arm poles, right? I like to pick the ones that don't have that. Or if they do have it, I rarely touch them. It's a lot harder to balance. You got to use your core. You got to use your midfoot to balance and stabilize. And if you pump it, like you can kind of sort of right give almost like a zone 3, zone 4 effort, but your heart rate can stay in zone 2 sometimes, you know, on an elliptical or cross training entity. And if you're pumping it on that elliptical and you're not hanging on to those arm poles, man, it is a killer workout, and it's a lot harder than you think. Just try to go 2 minutes without falling or balancing. And so that is actually a way to cross train, but actually make you a stronger, and more efficient, athlete, believe it or not. But you can also mess with the incline, there a little bit too, Vanessa.
That's a wonderful tip. And now I'm curious to see if I'll even be able to stay on an elliptical while not holding on to the arm things.
I like to keep the intensity the same the whole session. So if you have like a level 1 through 10 on intensity or resistance of the elliptical, I usually pick one and keep it there, but I adjust the incline. Almost every minute I go up or down, and that's a good way to keep you engaged, but also to kind of like you asked, like how do you get your heart rate up? How do you get that better workout on there?
Yeah, cool. Matt, what do you think?
Well, you know, not to reiterate everything Jeff said, but I mean, you're going to have at most gyms, you're going to have the big ones. You're going to have the treadmill, you're going to have the elliptical, stationary bike, recumbent bike, rowing machines. You'll even have spin bikes. And, you know, to kind of add on to that, you know, an elliptical, they come in many different ones. You have ones that have lateral leg motion, so you can actually get hip abduction and actually push out to the sides, almost like a speed skater. And again, you're also going to have all different types of machines depending on where you go. Jeff alluded to upper body ergometers. That's a whole new ball game. If you've never done one of those, that will get your heart rate elevated. And I think Jeff brought up a great point. No matter what you choose to use, think about, again, passion, purpose, progress. Think about the purpose and the intention of why you're doing it and where it fits into your training program. Purpose is the most important part of that. Why are we using it? What are we looking to accomplish? What are we looking to get out of it? And are we sticking to the integrity of the TriDot training program for heart rate? Maybe power. Some of these spin bikes, some of these stationary bikes, they have power. It is a metric. So I always encourage my athletes, you know, gyms are great. Hotel gyms, not so much. A whole different segment of this is traveling. If you're traveling, you're in a hotel. They might have a gym. I always tell my athletes, hey, call ahead of time, see what they have available so we can better structure your training program while you're away with what's available to you. If you're not going to have a pool, if you're not going to have a spin bike, hey, let's make adjustments so we can get done purposeful training while traveling with what we have available. So it's always important to do some research on that front end as well, especially with travel and gyms.
So do you think that there's any pros and cons for relying on these machines instead of doing a traditional swim, bike, run session? What do you think, Matt?
Oh, 100%. I mean, every piece of equipment is going to have pros and cons, and you really got to outweigh the positives versus the negatives. For me, some of the pros of using indoor gym equipment, kind of mentioned them earlier, weather, we don't have to worry about it. Childcare could potentially be one when you're looking at family situations. A lot of gyms offer childcare. If you're fortunate enough to have a treadmill or elliptical in your house and you have a baby, you can put the crib right next to it so your eyes are still on what's important. I really, really like ergometers, treadmills, and smart trainers and bikes for controlled pacing and precision and execution. You can really dial it in. Other positives are you don't have to worry about daylight. You don't have to worry about it being dark. You don't have to worry about, you know, safety, other cars, animals, all types of variables like that. Those are a lot of the pros. Now, cons, you know, there some of the pros could be cons as well. The pacing aspect, when you're on a treadmill, are you thinking about form or are you thinking about pacing? I always like to say zone two and zone three efforts can easily be executed outside, okay? It's going slow enough that we can worry about pacing and we can make cognitive decisions such as worrying about curbs, worrying about, you know, the sidewalk, worrying about stoplights, cars, other cyclists, other runners, strollers, animals, whatever's out there. But when we get into zone four and zone five and you're putting some effort down and you're working hard, cognitive choices become harder to make. We are thinking about executing and trying to do what's being asked of us, and we are less in tune with environmental things going around. All of a sudden, you didn't see that cyclist. You didn't see that car. You missed the stoplight. Your music's on. So cognition becomes a little bit harder. So pros and cons of both.
And Jeff, do you have anything to add to that?
Holy cow, that was awesome. You know, our races are swim, bike, and run. And so we need to swim, bike, and run, obviously. But cross-training can be amazing modalities for all the pros and cons that Matt just said. Knowing the purpose and why you're doing the cross-training is one, right? You just need to get out of the normal regimen and go do something unique. It's a morale thing. So go do the fun, quote, right? Cross-training, zone two type thing maybe I mentioned earlier. Or what if you're injured? You can't swim, bike, or run, right? So you have to use cross-training to maintain fitness while you heal. So that's kind of a big one. So kind of, is it just a random here and there you do it, or are you stuck doing it for long periods of time while you're healing or something like that? So there's a purpose there, just like Matt said. But the one more thing I'll add is, you know, the cons of doing too much cross-training or things that aren't our traditional sport stuff is that they're lower impact. So when you're doing all of these modalities, indoors, rowing, elliptical even, right? We can do that while we're injured, essentially, because there's not a ground and pound aspect, right? They're lower impact. But what happens if you do too much of this over too long and then you get back out into running again, you kind of have to train the body for that ground and pound tolerance, I call it. And so if right now I'm training for a marathon, I've done a ton of runs indoors on a treadmill, it's too cold or I need to run earlier, whatever. And then, I actually did my my last and longest long run recently. And you know, that mile 16, 17, I was really hurting. Just pounding the ground, my knees, my joints, my fitness was there, but my body was almost like saying, hey, I can't really maybe handle this as good as I thought. And so maybe I did too much cross training to build my cardio, but not that ground and pound tolerance of being on the concrete for 26 miles, right? And so there's that aspect.
I experienced the same thing just because we had a massive cold snap, was inside on the on the treadmill just like the past month. And then my first run outside, I was like, my ankle hurts, my toe hurts, my heel hurts. And I was like whining to my coach about all these things that were hurting. And it's probably just that I've been on the treadmill too much and it's way softer. So yeah, that makes a huge difference. So we had just briefly touched on this earlier, a few seconds ago. So Jeff, what machines do you recommend for an injured athlete to use so that they can continue to train safely, even if they have an injury and want to keep up their cardiovascular fitness?
Most injuries in the triathlon world are usually or probably lower body type injuries. And so if it's a lower body type injury, let's say, it depends factor, because what are we going to do? Like, can you swim? Right? Can you still swim? Or maybe it's a wound. It's an open wound lower body. So you still can't even swim. So, you know, in that aspect, maybe it's tubing instead of swimming, right? Or something like that. But a lot of it depends, again, on that type of injury. But if it's a lower body injury and you're still, with the approval of a doctor and talking with your coach, if you're still able to do certain cross-training modalities, like, is the elliptical okay? Right? Is a recumbent bike okay? My doctor doesn't want me riding outside because of that injury or something like that, and a safety or falling or whatever. So can I ride my bike indoors? Things like that. But the biggest thing for lower body injuries and cross training, a lot of lower body injuries, you still can't maybe potentially run on a treadmill, even though it is a little bit softer impact, lower impact. It is cross training. It is not quite the same as running outdoors, but elliptical. You can get a lot of the cardiovascular aspects pumping it on that elliptical. So I'd say elliptical is the next best thing if you're not allowed to run. And then for biking, if you're not allowed to switch, the injury is severe enough to where you're not allowed to set foot on a bike at all, is elliptical okay, right? Are we going to do other ways of just keeping a higher heart rate, right? Is it an upper body Pilates type class, you know, or something that where you're able to hold a higher heart rate for longer durations, and will that suffice? So just of all the options out there, I would just say get as close to that sport specific and discipline specific goal, right? If you're supposed to go do a hard interval run session that day, what are you allowed to do, you know, and then what do you have available in the gym to fulfill the integrity of that original design?
Great. Matt, do you have anything to add there, or did Jeff cover everything?
No, Jeff really hit the nail on the head, but I do have a couple things that I'll drop in on that. I think anytime we're dealing with injuries, I think one of the biggest things we got to always go back to is what are we cleared to do? What is the physician who's diagnosed this injury? Are we working in collaboration with a medical team, and are we staying within the guidelines laid out in their recovery protocol? You know, a lot of times we self-diagnose. I mean, I always say, don't confuse my medical degree with a Google search. You know, I love that, but it's like, don't self-diagnose. If we've got something going on, if you're in a boot, if you're in a shoulder splint, you're in it for a reason. Even as a coach, I will never, ever suggest or insinuate that my athlete should take that boot off and do something without the supervision or under, you know, outside the guidelines of their doc. You know, Jeff's exactly right. The elliptical is a great tool to utilize. You know, I always tell my athletes, hey, if you have a boot, ask if you can do the elliptical. You know what I mean? It is possible. You could potentially get on a recumbent bike as well. If you got a low back, if you got a hip, if you got a foot, if you got an ankle, you really got to work under the guidelines from the doc. But the elliptical and the stationary bike would be two big ones. And I'm going to throw one more in there. We all go there. We swim. Deep water walking and running. I cannot stress that enough. Deep water running, deep water aerobics, there's a reason I avoid it. It's hard. I am very quick to get my athletes to say, hey, listen, go jump in the deep water, put a flotation belt on. You're going to work core muscles you've never worked. You can get the little water dumbbells. And I don't want to offend anybody, but this is not a little old lady exercise. Get in the water. You can do water walking. You can do all types of things to maintain that running and also work different muscles you never knew you had when you get in the water. So deep water aerobics and deep water walking would be great ones.
Speaking from experience, from a highly injured past, you meet a lot of really cool people in those deep water workouts and the deep water running, because oftentimes you'll find other injured athletes doing those workouts as well. And so you can always connect with someone and have a great conversation when you're not trying to hit your zone four paces, of course. So that's awesome. Now, some of these tools are very different than swim, bike, and run. Like, as we had talked about earlier, hopping on a rowing machine, for example, but some, like the treadmill or a spin bike, are quite similar. So for the cardio machines that simulate swimming, biking, and running, do they work our muscles pretty close to the same way? Or is the input to our muscles totally different from actual swimming, biking, or running? Matt, let's go with you first.
Yes and no. That's the short answer.
Of course, it depends.
You know, the hard thing to answer there is, and you got to remember, and when you're running, and Jeff alluded to this already, when you're running inside on the treadmill, you're not having to deal with the ground force impact of the concrete of the ground. We're losing a little bit of that musculoskeletal impact because we have that soft cushioning of the treadmill. So again, are you getting as much out of it? You're missing that piece, okay? Same with cycling. When we're on a smart trainer and we're sitting there on a bike or on a stationary bike, power is power. I will not argue that. But if you're doing a hilly course, we know that power is power. And we do know that, you know, if you're going up a hill and you're pushing 300 watts versus on the flats, the hill's going to elicit a higher power output. But yes, there's a musculoskeletal aspect of shifting in your saddle, having to balance laterally, having to take turns, having to reach for hydration, having to reach for nutrition, shifting in the saddle. I mean, all of those things you can't mimic or kind of practice indoor. So, you know, we have rocker plates. We have people are now putting tennis balls under their trainer. We have all types of things going on. But again, I think ultimately it's a blend of the two. You know, and I think it's just whatever it is being intentional, being purposeful. Jeff and I have used those words multiple times today, and they're probably two of the most used words I have with all my athletes, intention and purpose. You've got to swim, you got to bike, you got to run. You can't just use trainers all the time. I always tell my athletes, do you want to be good at training or at racing? There's a difference between the two. You can be really good at training if you sit on erg mode all the time and nail your zones. You can be really good at training if you get on the treadmill and set it and just run and don't have the mental and cognitive connection. You can be really good at training if you just get in the water and swim laps back and forth. How do we translate that into racing? There are skill-specific pieces that have to be practiced, that have to be executed, and you can't do all of that indoor. You can develop a great engine, but to put that engine and race it, you got to get outside. You got to actually get on the bike, move around. You got to get in open water. You got to get on the road and run. Pacing is an important thing. You got to learn those things.
Yeah, that is well said. Jeff, do you want to add anything on top of that, or did he cover it all?
You can come out of an injury stronger and faster and fitter than before you went in. Or, worst case, I mean, hopefully that you can come in or maintain the fitness that you had before that injury. You're going to have to be strategic. You're going to have to be intentional. But then when you do have the green light to get back into it, you need to be careful. You need to ease back in to sports specific. You need to get back on the bike and ride outside. You need to run outside. You need to build the tolerance of the ground and pound, yes. But we saw it in our dry land tubing during COVID. We had 900 people in kind of a research thing here, and we were doing tubing for 6 to 9 months. Not one person was allowed in a pool during COVID. Well, when they came back, the consensus of the study was that out of 900 people, everyone was within about 1% of their 200 swim, or excuse me, one second they were within 1 second of their fastest 200 swim before the pandemic, and they didn't set foot in a pool once for 6 to 9 months or whatever it was. But that kind of proves that through dry land tubing and the technical aspects and your form and all the strength building that it does. Now, obviously, we lost stamina. We lost swim stamina. But we were able to come back and be just as strong in the water as before. And so there are ways to do it if you do it correctly.
We're going to totally switch gears because another aspect of training that is super important for a lot of people is being part of a community, especially for them to stay committed to it. And that social aspect is really, really important. So I'm wondering now, if we have a community that someone has been a part of in terms of group classes, are there any kind of group classes that you recommend for triathletes? And also, are there any that triathletes should avoid? Jeff, what's your take on this one?
I would just say this, kind of know where you're at, right? So ones to avoid, let's say, is if you're in, you know, this race prep stamina, the race is coming up, it's a long course race, I probably wouldn't go do an hour and a half, you know, crazy functional strength type class, or a random, let's say, kind of a CrossFit type class or something like that. Now, if you're in developmental, it's kind of preseason, the focus is on developing strength and power, you know, maybe you want to incorporate a couple of those more highly intensive strength building classes. So I would just say, again, like I said earlier, just be intentional with if it's something new, something different, and it's kind of, quote, random, at least steer it towards what is the original design of that day's workout, but also what phase of the training are you in and what is your main focus?
Matt, I have a feeling that you're going to jump in here with something along those same lines.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff hit a home run on that one. I think he nailed it. You know, it is 100% athlete specific. I mean, and like Jeff already mentioned, where in your season are they? Where in your build are you? I mean, are we in the off season? The off season or preseason, as a lot of us like to refer to it as, I mean, that's a great time just to maybe take a month, relax, have fun, do those classes you've been wanting to check out. You know, if there's a class at the gym that you want to check out that you haven't been able to do, go do it. If it brings you joy, if it brings you energy, and it's variety. But I mean, the one that I will reiterate, and Jeff brought this up, and I know it's a huge one, is yoga and Pilates. I mean, I think the biggest thing we got to think about there is we're looking at mobility and stability. Those are two of the greatest things we can do to reduce our likelihood of injury. As triathletes, I mean, we are sagittal plane monsters. We're going back and forth, forward and backwards, and we do not train enough for injury prevention. Mobility and stability are paramount for reducing the likelihood of injuries. I mean, all of us get the itises, patellar tendonitis, Achilles tendonitis, you know, the bursitises. A lot of that can be alleviated and reduced if we improve mobility and stability. I would also say we got to be very cautious, and Jeff talked about this. I'm not saying they're bad. We got to be cautious about where we implement the HIIT classes and the CrossFit style classes. They serve a purpose. They are good at the right time for the right person. One thing I'm always weary about as a fitness director, and I think Jeff will agree with this, is you got to have a good instructor. If it is not a good instructor that's leading the class, you really could be more likely to injure yourself. And you got to make sure whoever's leading the class understands progression and regression and is able to customize things to your personal level. Because if they're teaching to the most advanced person's level in that class and you're trying to keep up with them, you could walk away injured. You could walk away injured and behind the eight ball. So you need to make sure you advocate for yourself, talk to the instructor beforehand, walk up, introduce yourself, let them know if you got any aches or pains going on, and just ask them if they can give you any type of regressions or progressions that necessary for you. A good instructor will do that, and they will be happy that you came to them and talked to them about what limiting factors you're dealing with.
Those are really great tips. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's high quality knowledge right there. And I do have to say about the Pilates, I'm a huge Pilates advocate. I remember talking to the wonderful Miss Cindy Reeves one day, and she suggested to me, she's like, you've got to get on that reformer Pilates. And man, has that made a difference in my entire training. It's been a miracle. So I highly vouch for that form of class, that's for sure. Now, if someone does want to go to one of these classes that we've mentioned, how would you adjust their program to incorporate this class into their training? Is there something that you would get rid of or replace, or how would you go about doing that?
Look at your lowest priority sessions for the week. Look at your easy run. Look at your easy bike. If we see the word easy in front of a session, remember, those sessions are meant to assist in recovery, enhance recovery, not command more recovery. You know, I use a red light, yellow light, green light mentality. So remember, all of those are heart rate based sessions. So if your heart rate cap for zone two is 142, that's your red light. I always tell my athletes, red light 142. The yellow light is 140. What's going to happen when you see the yellow light? That red light's coming. Okay. Green light is anything 137 or less in that example. Nothing says you got to go up to 142. You can stay low as long as you're in zone two. So remember that with these sessions. So that's a great opportunity. If you want to go do one of these other classes, if you want to go do a step aerobics class, let's say, and it's an easy run day, certainly do it, but just try to be mindful of the heart rate still. You know, if you want to go do a group cycling class instead of doing your easy zone two bike ride, you probably could. You just got to be mindful of how much resistance you actually put on the spin bike. A lot of different varieties out there, but it all goes back to purpose and intention again. And I'm quick. If an athlete says to me, "Hey, coach, you know, there's this great class I want to do." First of all, if they're willing to express that interest and that it means that much to them, I want to find a way to make it work, because that's personal enjoyment for them. So I try to bend over backwards and try to make a way for it to fit into their program, because it is a social piece and it is something that sounds like it matters to them. So let's make it work. I think that's the important thing.
Jeff, do you have anything to add for that one?
I'll take it from the approach of, you know, group training. Like, hey, I want to go ride with my local group this weekend, or I want to go, you know, to the track, or go on a run on the trail with my buddies. So how do you kind of keep the intent or integrity of the original workout, but also get the social and fun? And there's just so many ways to do it. But I mean, you could, hey, I got 3x8 minutes. Yeah, let's go run an hour and a half all together. But hey, if I surge a little bit, just let the group know, right? You know, your few buddies, hey, I might just push it for 5-8 minutes, but I'll, you know, let's regroup and all that. So you can kind of find ways to make that work. Sometimes you just need to clear your mind and you know, no data ride, so to speak, and just go ride out with buddies. But there are ways to kind of have your cake and eat it too, or have that win-win. But I am always an advocate of trying to make those, you know, fun group sessions happen. There are ways. I used to hold track workouts at our facility that I used to, a multi-sport facility that I used to manage. And, you know, those who had structured training, we'd warm up and cool down together, but they would do their workout in the outside lane, right? And then the others who had their workouts, the group would do them on the inside lanes. And so everyone's still together and things like that. So there's ways to make it work. You just got to get a little creative.
That is a really creative idea.
One other thing to throw in there, and Jeff just said this, but I mean, I got to put a plug in for it, is we have these great Saturday morning Tri-Dot group rides on Zwift. What a great opportunity that Jeff said, where, you know what, you log in, everybody stays rubber banded together. I might have 2x16 threshold and 2x10 zone three. Somebody else might have step ups. Somebody else might be on, you know, a stamina bike ride, but there's that community aspect. There's the chat going on. So that, to Jeff's point, what a great way just to have that social piece, have your cake and eat it too, as he said.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on the Saturday group rides. That is one of the things that drew me to the Tri-Dot community right from the get-go. Is they started up and I was 100% in there and loving every second of it. And it was a really wonderful way to spend your training session, that's for sure. Now, We're going to jump back into one other last question here. Now, I was in a boot for 8 months straight with a high ankle sprain and a cult fracture. And I can tell you that it got really old really fast. And some of my friends from a running group, they were so kind, and they decided to hire a personal trainer to run a boot camp type class. And I was able to actually participate with some modification in my boot. I was wearing it. But I didn't feel disconnected from the group, and it was a really wonderful way to stay present with my friends. Now, the instructor, as you had mentioned earlier, was a really good instructor and modified the exercises that I could participate, and it was great, great fun. So I'm wondering if there are any other types of classes that you would suggest to help an injured athlete stay connected to the community so they don't feel sad all the time. Matt, what do you think?
Not to reiterate what we've already said, but I think some of the best ones would definitely, in my opinion, from a group class perspective, would be deep water aerobics, shallow water aerobics, Pilates and yoga. I think those four in particular will really allow an injured athlete, somebody that's dealing with something that could be in a boot, could potentially be on crutches, could possibly have something going on that needs some special considerations. Modifications could be made in yoga, Pilates, and obviously I think in the water, as long as it's safe and you don't necessarily, like, not every pool has what I call wheelchair access, so where it's a zero entry pool. So if they don't have a lift chair, if you got to get down a ladder, that may not be an option. So you got to take those things into consideration as well, and definitely check with the aquatic facility you're going to. A lot have a lift if you need it to get in and out because you have a lower body injury. Some have zero access, which means you can just walk on in just fine. But if you can't use the ladder, you can't get in the pool. I don't think you want to cannonball off, and I know they don't want you jumping off the diving board. Might be fun to do, might be fun to see, but I don't think that's going to help the injury, if you know what I mean.
I'll jump in here and just say, Vanessa, and to anyone that is dealing with injury, it takes a special person to stay motivated. You know, yes, there's kind of like the what is it, the seven levels of getting through an event or a trauma, and you know, depression and anger and all these things, right? But it takes a special person to stay motivated, to really reach out, branch out, find those other modalities, do it right. So kudos to you, Vanessa, and anyone that's going through this and doing the best that they can to just stay motivated, to stay fit, to stay excited, and not sit around and sulk and waste that time while you're healing. So kudos to you and good job. And I'll throw in, like, you could do little things at home, like little 15, 20 minute Peloton, you know, strength workouts, or bike, or, you know, other fun modalities, YouTube videos, and doing them at home, and finding these ways to think outside the box. There's tons of resources out there. So you don't just have to, you know, indoor train by joining a gym and going to one of their classes. You can get creative at home. And finding those videos and things like that. So buying, you know, tubing bands or a set of dumbbells or something that's going to help you just stay active, keep moving, and you could do it at home indoors, not just other facilities.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
All right, everyone, it's Coach Cooldown Tip Time, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. Joining me today is a veteran TriDot coach from way back in the day when athlete information was collected and tracked on Excel sheets. It's crazy how the platform has evolved over the last 15 plus years. John Mayfield has been triathloning since 2010. He is a 10 times Ironman finisher and an Alcatraz finisher, which may just classify as one of his all-time favorite race experiences. These days, he is a full-time triathlon coach and specializes in long course athletes who are busy parents and or professionals longing to be competitive, even if it's simply with themselves. He currently lives in Friendswood, Texas with his wife, three kids, three dogs, and three chickens. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks for having me.
So I hear that you are a true crime buff, and I have one question for you. Did you ever watch Unsolved Mysteries as a kid?
I loved Unsolved Mysteries as a kid. Constantly. So even in streaming, it's still on. But man, I am equally as a massive fan of the reboots that I guess it's Netflix has done. Those when I see there's like a new season of that, I get elite level Vanessa excited for those. Yeah, they're good. The one thing that is a little bit I guess frustrating about Unsolved Mysteries is it doesn't wrap up. So like that's the point. It like wouldn't be Unsolved Mysteries if it was solved. But now every once in a while they will have those updates, and those are really good if they've got the little update music comes on and like, oh, they solved this one. So yeah, big fan awesome. Of Unsolved Mysteries. So fun little story. Coach Joe and I, we do a lot of our training rides together. And of course we go ride out in these remote places where traffic is pretty minimal. And so we're on these back roads and all, and we're like always, she's a crime buff too. And it's like, we're always talking, like the other day we were out riding and we saw this, there was a car that was kind of driving through a field. And we're like, there's definitely a body in that trunk. It's like, what? They get like a truck. We're driving down that road. This is like a sedan. We're out in the middle of nowhere. They're driving down this dirt road. They're definitely ditching a body. So it's like that. That's what goes through our minds too, when we're out there on those long rides. But so we're always kind of keeping an eye out for potential crime scenes and taking notes. Like it's a red 97 Buick. And yeah, so just in case we need that information later on.
But you didn't stop.
No, because one thing we've learned is never leave witnesses. So, don't want to get, I don't want to end up in the trunk.
Well, let's transfer to triathlon tips. What triathlon tip do you have for us today?
Yeah. So this is one that I've really, really kind of not learned, but really embraced over the last couple of years. You know, what can we do to really maximize our performance? How do we go out and beat that PR that we had previously set on a really good day? How do we continue to improve? How do we beat the field and qualify for those championship races? And I think so many times we focus on fitness. It's I need to get as fit as possible. And yes, that's absolutely true. But what I've really come to kind of see and realize is that fitness and race readiness is really like half the battle. It's what you do on race day. How do you execute your race? And that's really going to determine how much of that fitness that you realize, how much of that race potential do you realize is going to be based on your execution. So you can go out there with an extremely high level of fitness, but if you don't race or execute that race properly or well, you're never going to realize the potential that you could have had on that day. And that's just a travesty to go and to build all that fitness, but not get to cash it in. And really what I've seen is the keys to execution are things that are done prior to the race. So these are things like your recovery, your injury prevention, injury management. So if you feel something coming on, what are you doing to make sure that it doesn't kind of spiral into something bigger? Are you tapering properly? A lot of times athletes just like to shut down and rest up, and that's a component to tapering, but you also need to remain active in that taper. And then even things like logistics, especially for a big race, when you're taking into consideration things like travel and where do you stay and what do you eat? How are your meals prepared? All these things that are really going to be kind of manifest on race day. And then actually during the race, the pacing is obviously critical. If you go out too hard, if you go out too easy, both of those have implications. And then I have almost like this, I guess it's not a trinity, but kind of like it. It's nutrition, hydration, electrolytes. And then kind of the fourth that makes it not the trinity would be cooling. So I think those four components are massively critical during the race. And so that's something I've really focused on for myself, as well as the athletes that I work with, is having a well-vetted hydration plan, knowing how many ounces of fluid you need per hour, especially given the environment that you're going to be racing in. One thing I've really come into in the last couple of years, and a lot of it has to do with our partnership with Precision Fuel and Hydration, is just how important having adequate electrolytes is, and realizing that so many products don't have enough. And that's something that really is largely unique and really special about those Precision products is, for me, I have a very high rate of loss of electrolytes. So they're really the only product on the market that I can easily get the amount of electrolytes that I need. And we've seen that with a lot of other athletes as well. So then your nutrition, obviously you have to dial in that nutrition protocol, knowing what works for you. So everyone has a little bit different tolerance for different types of calories. Some have sensitivities and some like different products. So it's finding what works for you. What works for me may not work for you. So it's finding the actual product. And even that can cover the gamut of, is it some type of sports drink? Is it gels? Is it some kind of solid? Is it solid foods? Whatever it is that's going to work best for you to give you the energy that you need and make sure that you don't have those GI issues. Because again, all these things can really sabotage all this level of fitness. And then the other one that is really key, and I think oftentimes overlooked, but it's a cooling protocol. We race usually in the summer. A lot of these races tend to get warm, and I don't even use the word hot, because it doesn't necessarily have to be a hot day for that temperature to impact your performance. It only takes a warm day, and you are going to have to mitigate that. So once your core temperature begins to rise, your body is going to limit how much it's going to put out. So you have to keep your core temperature cool. So what are you doing? It's not just about staying comfortable. And I think that's what some people think cooling is about, is, yeah, I'm getting hot, so I want to cool off. Because that's kind of our normal kind of routine. It's just day to day. It's, if we're hot, we want to get cool. But understanding that your body is going to not allow that core temperature. Bad things happen when your core temperature gets too high. It's like having a fever. So it's your body is going to begin to shut down and limit your output. So if that core temperature is going up, your performance is coming down. So it's what is your cooling protocol? It's twofold. It's controlling that core temperature from the inside. So taking in things like cool fluids and even chewing on ice. And then same thing from the outside, is how are you managing your temperature from the outside? So it's covering skin. It's keeping your body wet, you putting ice down your kit, under your cap, things like that to cool from the inside as well as the outside. And really, obviously, the higher the temperature, the more critical this is going to be. This is why we see such an impact on those really hot races. But I think it's important to understand that it doesn't necessarily have to be a hot day when you're out there running and when you're cycling, and especially the harder you're cycling and the harder you're running, the lower that temperature threshold is going to be. So, and I would say the vast majority of triathlons, unless you have just a very early season race, a very late season race, most of the races that we have are going to be in a warm enough environment where that really, really becomes critical.
This is a fabulous tip. And I just have one small thing to add about this cooling protocol, because I know it's something that I have not done previously. Before I implemented a cooling protocol, I didn't practice the cooling protocol. And so I'd never run in a really wet kit before, you know. So during the race, when I was taking, like, you know, all the ice and shoving it in all the places and cooling myself off, it was a very interesting feeling to run in that really wet kit. And my socks got all wet and my shoes got all wet. And I think that's an important thing to practice. But yeah.
Yeah. And even kind of managing those things and knowing, you know, because if you're used to maybe, say, your race shoes, you've only ran in them dry and they don't cause blisters. Well, what if they get wet and they do? And it's kind of managing that too. It's yeah, you try to keep your feet dry as long as possible, but, you know, kind of depending on the day, you may just be drenching yourself just to fight it off. And at that point, yeah, you're going to be sloshing around. So it's important to know, you know, maybe it's some Band-Aids, maybe it's some Vaseline or something like that, because your feet are going to get wet. And if your feet get wet, you know, there's a higher risk of blisters.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com. and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.